investigative journalist Molly Barrows. For years, I've covered the stories that made headlines in Northwest Florida and all along the Gulf Coast. Murders. Missing persons. And mysteries of all kinds. These cases are far from over for many victims, because the full story has yet to surface. Join me for Gulf Coast Confidential, where I dive into the saltier side of the South and expose the lies, greed, and corruption that often weighs down the truth. It's time to turn the tide and get a shot at justice. Hey, I'm Molly Barrows, and welcome to the Gulf Coast Confidential podcast, where we cover some of the most scandalous crimes and cases that bubble up in Northwest Florida and beyond. Joining me, as always, to talk about these what-in-the-world-is-going-on-here cases is Pam Hill. She's a pharmacist and advocate for victims because she's experienced violent crime in her own family. And so, Pam, this case that we're talking about now, I think it has some particularly crazy twists. It's called Accused of Fentanyl Poisoning Her Husband, Then Authoring Children's Grief Book. I'll take Who is Corey Richens for 100, Alex.
I swear, this case right here, we better just get comfortable because this is a doozy.
I know. And so many of these murder cases boil down to just self-centeredness, but I just feel like this 33-year-old Corey Richens is just about as mean and cold and calculating as they come, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. She's something else. She's packaged herself in a different way. Actually, I kind of think of her as, like, we talk about Interplanet Janet. She doesn't have a clue that all the stuff she's doing, people are looking at her going, you are pitiful. We can tell you're, you know, like a pathological liar, a manipulator, a narcissist, selfish, but she tries to wrap it all up in altruism or her narrative. So this is going to be fun.
It is. I know. And I think about her pictures and those, you know, pretty white teeth and that pretty face. And I'm thinking, I guess she's just used to getting by with just a flash and a smile and maybe a doing some fibbing, if you will. Oh, now it's catching up with her. So if you're not familiar, we're talking about 33-year-old Corey Richens. She is charged with aggravated murder and 3 counts of drug possession. Authorities in Utah, where this happened, believe she poisoned her husband, 39-year-old Eric, by spiking a drink she gave him with fentanyl in March of 2022. Police believe greed is the motive for that Utah mother and realtor. She had a business flipping houses, which had struggled financially. Eric Richens had a successful masonry business. Well, Eric Richens' family said he discovered she'd been stealing money from him for years to keep her business afloat. And shortly before he died, she was actually trying to buy an unfinished mansion in their area that she intended to flip and make millions. Only her husband wasn't on board with the plan. He didn't think it was a good idea. Next thing you know, he's dead. She's buying the house anyway and raising their 3 young boys alone. She even wrote a tearjerker, a children's book called Are You With Me, which talks about navigating grief, overcoming grief from the man that she's accused of killing. Mm-hmm. And she self-published that book about a year after Eric died. And a short time later, she was charged with murder. So now she's in jail awaiting trial. So there's a lot to break down with this case,
Pam. Definitely. Yeah. Well, with the children's book, she was kind. She dedicated it to her husband.
Wow,
it's dedicated
nice
to him. She put one of her children's likeness on the front, sort of in a cartoony way, because it's a children's book. And then peeping out from one of the clouds up there is you-know-who, Eric Richens,
the
with angel wings.
Daddy. Yeah,
yeah, with angel wings. And I was like, I cannot believe this. She even went on local TV shows, like, say, Good Morning America, Good Morning Pensacola, Good Morning Whomever, up there in Utah, where she's from. And she was telling her little story, doing her little dog and pony show and her little sale. And, you know, when she was talking to one of the newscasters or one of the journalists like you, somebody sent in a little note that said, you do know she killed her husband, right? So it was on after that.
Nice. Well, that's the kind of thing that you'd want to ask somebody about,
I imagine, in the middle
of a live interview. So let's talk about how she killed him. It's interesting. You know, we hear a lot about accidental overdose with fentanyl poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, she went after it, according to police, in order to kill her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And fentanyl wasn't even the only thing that they found in her system. Tell us a little bit about what you've learned about that.
Okay. Well, it wasn't the first time she's tried it either. You know, they traveled a lot. He was a hunter. He liked to hunt. He What else did she want from this man? He was a good man. He's a handsome man, rugged, sweet, nice, kind, good daddy, good husband.
Good provider.
Good provider, good family member. Spoiled her to death, let her go on and on and on with other monies, but it was never enough. And I mean, he did everything, but it like we say, her drug of choice is more. It's never enough. So here's what happened. She, I guess, was pouting, like sometimes folks will do, that he wouldn't let her buy that $2 million unfinished mansion. It was 22,000 square feet out in the foothills of the beautiful mountains in Utah. And just for extra, there's a 3,300 square foot caretaker's house right beside it. Okay, so this shows you this was left unfinished for years and years and years. It's sort of like that house that sat on Scenic Highway over here forever and ever and ever, right there on prime property, to where it just bothered people after a while. It's not pretty anymore.
An eyesore.
Right, it's an eyesore, and it's like, this is not good. So anyway, she had her mind made up. She was going to do that. And he advised her as far as like business and her husband and stuff. He had a profitable business. He had a successful business. She has had a series of horribly failing businesses and not making good choices and good sense. She ran his credit cards up. She took money out of his accounts. She forged his name. She bought life insurance in their children's name and in her husband's name, and even went and changed benefactors and stuff on life insurances. This girl's been busy because no is not an answer she wants to hear.
Right. And we're going to get into that a little bit more, including some of the previous attempts that he believes that she made. But this particular night when he passed away, she claims they were celebrating the sale of this house, that they were going to buy it, that he was on board. She and her family are claiming that he was on board. His family is saying absolutely not was he on board. But at any rate, her story is that they were celebrating. She made him a drink, and then he went upstairs to go to sleep. And she was putting one of the other little boys to bed and basically fell asleep with one of the other children. Mm-hmm. Woke up around 3 in the morning, went back to the master bedroom, crawled into bed with him, and realized he was cold and stiff and that he had died. Mm-hmm. So that's when she called 911 and said the boys just sat there together on the couch and cried. And it's heartbreaking to think that you would deliberately put your children through something like that if you were to take their father away on purpose. But it just is interesting to me that when they, you know, it took a year to charge her, but they did do the autopsy and the results showed that he had 5 times the amount of fentanyl that it takes to kill someone, plus then some. So, I mean, she really was going to make sure she crossed that T and dotted that I.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're not going to take away from her. She does kick it through the uprights. When she decides to do something, she does it. Because not only was there fentanyl in his system, there was quetiapine, or the generic name for Seroquel, which is an antipsychotic that can be used for bipolar or schizophrenia. And guess what? That prescription was hers. And he didn't have a prescription for that. And also, with the poisoning that night, of course she can say they were doing anything. She could say they were knitting crochet blankets because he's not here. But what was happening there is she had made him a Moscow mule. And so she had served that to him. And she said one of the children said, I'm having a nightmare or night terrors. So she went in there to lay down with them, she says. But she never came back for a long time. And so he's drinking the Moscow mule. And she said she just laid down with the child there. But what they found out is her phone had been opened and closed many, many times. And I think she was in the other room. But so there he's got that in his system, fentanyl in his system. And the way she got the fentanyl was, you know, you just can't buy fentanyl just anywhere. She had a person that they refer to as CL, who we've kind of done some reading and stuff and found out that's her housekeeper.
Right.
Her name's Carmen Lauber, I think. And so she had told Carmen, try to get me some hydrocodone. That was the first step. You know, people start with the Norco or Lortab, I reckon. Get me that. Well, that didn't do what she wanted it to do with whomever, because Eric had gotten sick before when they had traveled to Greece on when they were drinking. And then he had gotten sick on Valentine's Day, also another episode of this, where she had made him a sandwich and put it in his car, sort of like a lovely little lunch. She didn't do that. That wasn't her normal personality and stuff. He got so sick on that one and throwing up that he thought he was going to die, and he grabbed his son's EpiPen and used that. And somehow that stave some of that off to where he could get help and stuff. So we've got this where she's getting building up to the fentanyl. She's tried all these other things.
According to police, yes. Right. And he also told his family he felt like she was trying to kill him.
I know. I don't know why somebody would stay during that. I just don't get that. But.
Apparently, the family attorney said that he was concerned about leaving the boys, that he was trying to stay close to the boys. And he felt like if he left her, which he had at one point consulted with a divorce attorney, he had gone over and realized she was secretly stealing money from him. And that's why he decided to make sure his sister was the beneficiary of the life insurance policies, that he started a living trust. He made his sister the executor of that, unbeknownst to his wife. Mm-hmm. So according to the family attorney, he didn't trust her. He was aware that she was up to no good. I wonder if he really thought she was actually going to go through with it. I don't know why you think you'd be any good to your son's dead, Mm-mm. which is what's so sad. But I guess maybe he didn't think she'd actually really be successful or go through with it, or maybe he questioned it. But according to the family attorney, he just wanted to be close to those boys.
And I can understand that, because, I mean, we can even look at all these other cases where people kind of had an idea. Look at all the men Judy Buonanno poisoned, and they at some point had some idea. One even saved one of the capsules to make sure they showed it to someone else. I'm like, you might not be alive long enough to show that to someone. But let's get back to the fentanyl and the Moscow mule. All right, so there she is. She serves that up to him and conveniently is out of the room for a while, a couple of hours, they say. All right, so that fentanyl, she gives that to him in that drink, is alleged, okay? So she finds him at the foot of their bed on the floor, and he's cold to the touch. So what they did was they found out the fentanyl in his system was 5 times the lethal dose, not just a dose, and that was in his stomach with the quetiapine or the Seroquel and a Moscow mule, liquor, alcohol, something like that. So, I mean, we're looking at all of that. They said if that was not in his stomach, if that would have been absorbed into his blood system, obviously it killed him. It was toxic and lethal and fatal. But that would have been enough fentanyl. And they used this term, they said, to kill an army. Mm. Now, I don't know what an army is, but I'm going to just go ahead and say it's more than 20 people.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that was a lot. So she got the
overkill.
Right. She got this fentanyl from her
housekeeper.
She told her, she said, I need some fentanyl. And so she got her, I think, about 15 or 20 tablets, and it was $900.
And supposedly that's what she had put into the sandwich before or something, it wasn't strong enough.
Right, and it was probably powder or whatever, you know, liquid, not to give anybody extra clues or anything, but I'm thinking liquid's best, actually, it's quicker. So then she needed 15 or 20 more fentanyl. And this time when she told Carmen, when she told her that, she said, I want some of that Michael Jackson stuff. Okay. Well, fentanyl's not Michael Jackson stuff. That's propofol. And anyway, it's very telling what she said. And Michael Jackson didn't get to enjoy or recreate with it. He is not here either, you know. And they used to call propofol, and some people still do, mother's milk, because you just go to sleep and you never wake up again. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here we are with this. All right. So now the stage is set. All right. She overdosed him, allegedly, with fentanyl.
That's terrible. Well, and her behavior afterwards, I feel like now we're really seeing the battle of the narrative. Mm-hmm. She's got her family out there going, nuh-uh, her business was successful. They had a happy marriage. There was no problems at all. She would never do something like this. And then his family is saying the exact opposite.
Right.
In fact, his sister is one of the vocal ones, too. And she said, I thought it was an interesting story. She said that shortly after he passed, she was over at the house because she had had conversations with him. Like we talked about, she knew he had doubts about her and didn't trust her. And he even told his family, if something happens to me, look at Corey.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what she was doing. And so she said she went to the house and Corey was trying to break into a safe that had belonged to Eric. And basically the sister said, you don't have a right to that. He essentially, this is going to be under the estate that he put under my discretion.
Mm-hmm.
And she freaked out and they started fighting. And her brother is saying, oh, they were both swinging at each other. Whatever she's saying isn't true. And that's what we're seeing every single time. Every time her family or the prosecution comes up and says, she did plan this, she bought fentanyl from the housekeeper, there were issues with her finances, money was the motivator, and they have all this documentation, he's right there saying, oh, no, that's not how it was, that Eric was into drugs, that Eric had once wanted him to bring fentanyl from Mexico, and Eric, you know, this, that, and the other. But while the prosecution has documentation, their family does not.
Right, right.
From what I understand, Corey's in fact trying to manufacture some evidence is what it seems like.
Oh, yeah. And she can't even let this man rest in peace because she her brother's name is Ronnie, and he's not the brightest bulb in the box. And he does whatever she says, even though she's incarcerated and she's looking at attempted murder charges and stuff. He still considers her, I guess, wise, a sage, what have you. But he's that kind of person that's a follower. So basically, she and he, Ronnie, had made up some sort of narrative that Eric was a hunter. He went all over the world hunting. He was just a man that had a cool life. He just loved life. It just makes me so sad that she did that to him.
Yeah, he had done well.
Yeah, and he enjoyed everything. I mean, what else do you want from a person? Anyway, they said that he traveled all over the world. So she and her brother, Ronnie, decided that they're going to put out there that Eric would quite frequently go down to Mexico, and he would get fentanyl, he would buy fentanyl, and that he would bring it back. And then in his truck, like this little allergy bottle I got right here, she said, you know where he hides it. He hides it in an allergy bottle in his work truck. Well, see, those two are the only ones saying that. And, you know, if he took fentanyl, like she says, he couldn't have kept a business. He couldn't have done his work. He couldn't have tended to his children. His family would have known. He wouldn't have looked as handsome as he was. He would have had car accidents and stuff. This did not happen. And she just has gotten away. This girl will climb a tree to tell a lie when she could stand on the ground and tell the truth. I'm serious.
No, and there's even some documentation or potential evidence to that effect, that they found the letter in her jail cell that she had hidden in that LSTAT book. And supposedly she was trying to say it was a letter for her attorney, mm-hmm. and it was protected under attorney-client privilege. But essentially, it was a letter to her family telling them what her brother needed to say to support her account of mm-hmm. things, is yeah. what it comes across.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, as if this stuff wasn't crazy enough.
Right.
You know, now, she got arrested, 8 or 9 months ago? And now we've got this, what's called the walk the dog letter. It's a letter she wrote on there, you know, because she says she's a author now. She wrote a grief book after she killed her husband, you know, and then writes that. And she says she has another book in the works. It's called Mommy, How Far Away Is Heaven? That's the second one she's working on. But now she says, and I wrote this down. I gave 30 minutes of my life that I'll never get back to listening to phone conversations between her and Ronnie, and then reading this walk the dog letter. This walk the dog letter, it just says it right across the top, walk the dog, 2 exclamation points. And then on the edge, it says, but take vague notes so you remember. Now, a lot of this stuff is the stuff she goes back and forth with her brother on the phone. And these two, she's 33 years old. I don't know how old Ronnie is, but these two cannot even have a conversation without sounding like two silly Valley girls. They're he went to Mexico, and then you throw a few F-bombs in there, and there's their phone conversation. But not before she tells her mother, basically, what I need you to do, and I think walk the dog means lead Ronnie around, is what I think it means. Tell him what I need him to say, and this is how he has to say it, and that goes back to that Mexico fentanyl they keep saying Eric's going to fetch.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think 48 Hours did a piece on it, and both families wanted their viewpoints out there. Mm-hmm. But the brother even uses that term, narrative. He goes, well, I'm not sure about that narrative, which mm-hmm. I thought was
yeah.
revealing.
Right. Well, that's a big word for him. And I don't know that he knows that by
like himself. That narrative.
Like. I couldn't listen to like that anymore, hardly. But, you know, every lie she's told has been fried, dyed, and laid aside. Everybody's found it. But what's interesting on this is you can't help but notice this character, her Amazon, Glamazon attorney, Sky Lazaro, I think is her name. And she's a character. We're going to get to see her, too. This trial ain't going to happen until about a year, I don't think.
But yeah, they haven't set a date yet.
Because she can't quit doing this stuff. She needs a seat at the prosecution's table because she's the best gift they've ever had. She just needs to stop. I know her attorney. Her attorney's like a white-collar attorney, and she represents sports people. And she's high-rolling. And you can tell she sits in there, and she has her little self-propped up, and she wears her little pencil skirts and va-va-voom figure and her high heels. And if you notice, Corey will have her legs stretched out under that table to make sure we all see that she's got on high heels, too.
Ew.
You know, so we're making sure she's used her feminine wiles to get everything she's wanted so far.
It definitely comes across that
so
way.
So these two almost look like cartoon characters almost, but Sky is a pretty lady, but she's fierce. It's like looking at the sun. She's fierce. So this going on, but I know, see, this walk the dog letter, she said, was intended to go to Sky, her attorney.
So what, Sky could pass along the letter to the brother?
I guess, because she says this is her manuscript, too. She can't quit telling lies to tell a lie. But the thing is also in the walk the dog letter, if you look further down, somewhere in the walk the dog letter, it says, hey, get Sky get me some Crest White teeth whitening strips and put them in an envelope and give them to Sky and she'll sneak them in here to me. So, I mean, this girl doesn't even know to straighten up when she's in prison or jail.
I know, because they read all of that.
Yeah, they just do it. But this lady's not going to risk her reputation and her career to get you some Crest White strips. And so that she's talking about why she needed them. She said, because all I've got to do in here is drink coffee and it makes your teeth yellow. And then she mentioned something about a Mexico prison because she's saying she's right a story about her being in a Mexican prison trying to fool the human traffickers of young girls.
Insane. And I mean,
she is not right. This lady is just out there.
Well, it does make you wonder why she was on that particular medication. Was it for antipsychotic behavior?
It is. It can be used for bipolar, or it can also be used for schizophrenia. It can be used for several other things, and it works well for people. But the thing is, you don't just take it willy-nilly. And that's another thing when they had a warrant looking for her medicines in her house, the quetiapine or the Seroquel. She said, I don't know where my medicine is, man. Our maid moves it around all the time. Well, at my house, housekeeper, guest, friends, family, nobody moves other people's medicine around. We kind of got a rule like that.
I know. That makes no sense. It just sounds like crap. Well, maybe she moved it around when she was trying to find things to sell you.
Yeah, or the fentanyl or right. What have you. But
right.
But she has an answer for everything, but it's not even a good answer.
Right. Yeah, and that's essentially what the defense was saying, too. They were trying to undermine the credibility of the housekeeper because that's the one connection that they've got to mm-hmm. her buying fentanyl and then giving it to him, spiking his drink with it. But they're saying, well, this housekeeper has been arrested before. She's not credible. But who else are you going to go to? Of course, right. She's going to go to the person that, yeah. that it has experience with it.
Right. You're going to go to your pastor and say, hey, can you get me some fentanyl from
right.
Mexico?
Right. Super unhappy with the hubs. Really would like to see this put an end
right.
to this. But yeah, and I thought it was interesting, too, that he had, you know, basically made his sister executor of his estate. And she had no idea until after he passed. And I think that's mm-hmm. probably why she freaked mm-hmm. out. Like, I could really see that scene. And I say hats off to that family.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You know, my heart goes out to them. And, of course, those boys.
Oh, yeah. The families, I can identify with those families going through that. Because that's kind of sort of what we went through and still are going through with Sharon. Anything that Randy wanted to say, he just said, and it wasn't right. He just said it, and we're over here having to try to correct it or this, that, and the other. And then just like Randy estranged my family from Elizabeth, Corey estranged her three boys from all the Richens family and has told them that the Richens don't love them or care about them. It's the same thing that happened in my family. So I can...
Unnecessary.
Yeah, I can identify with this because evil does not win. Evil has a good old time sometimes, but it doesn't win because you're going to get caught.
Absolutely.
You know? And then as far as her, you know, the things that she wanted to do, so her having that $1 million home to flip meant more to her than her husband and her children and her good name and being a good person. You can see where we're going with this one. She doesn't care. She just doesn't care. And then yeah. she's going to come out and act like everybody's a stark raving fool.
But her.
And write a book. They took that book off the market, off of Amazon. And then there is a settlement that any proceeds from that book go to Eric's family. Or basically to the boys, I think. But she really still thinks that she's going to write this second book and she's going to write a best-selling fiction book. And this is the beginning of it, this Walk the Dog.
That just sounds horrific to me. I can't believe anybody would even want to celebrate themselves. But, you know, she created the scenario and is capitalizing on it. Sounds like mm-hmm. a true psychopath, really.
Yeah. Well, and then when she had that party for flipping the house the day after Eric died.
Well, she bought that house the day after he died. Mm-hmm. He's not even cold, hardly, and she's already buying that house. Yeah. And then she lost that house. She wasn't able because of her arrest. And anyway, so it's actually been purchased by another buyer.
Mm-hmm. For $3.75 million. So I think she lost a little money on it. But the thing is, Eric was a businessman. Just because, I mean, that's what happens in business a lot. People that go into business that think everything's pie in the sky and everything's easy, he knew how much it took to make money. And see, she didn't care because she wasn't paying their taxes. She wasn't using her money. She was using his money. And I mean, so why does someone marry someone when you're just trying to use them up? You're not a very good person. As you can tell, I do not like her.
Yeah, I know. And it's just so cruel. It's so unnecessary, like so many of these cases. If you're unhappy in your situation, just leave.
Yeah.
You know, but she didn't want to because Mm-mm. it was about the money. And she wanted to stay and she wanted what she wanted. She didn't want to take any responsibility for her mistakes. He even thought she had been cheating on him during mm-hmm. their marriage as well. So, again, I think it's a shame. I don't know why he stayed. Again, maybe it was to be closer to the boys. But at the same time, again, you're no good to them when you're gone. No. And that's a shame.
Yeah.
And I feel so bad for them that now they've lost both their parents because she's out of the picture too. Perhaps mm-hmm. it's better for
yeah.
them
oh,
to
yeah.
be away from her.
Mm-hmm. Well, and hopefully his family, because he has aunts. The kids have aunts. And both those aunts, one of them stood up there and did a victim impact statement. She, this knucklehead, she even made a motion to dismiss the charges. That's what the last court case was. And one of his other sisters got up there and said, well, let me tell you about her. And she told about Corey buying life insurance on the boys, turning them against their family, and all the things she did and talking all that terrible stuff about her brother. Then the older sister is the one having to deal with all this, being the person that takes care of the will and the finances and stuff. Well, this little walk the dog letter here got Corey locked down for 23 out of 24 hours. So she doesn't understand how that happened either. She doesn't understand why people in there don't like her. You know, so she's just really clueless. And I really think with a year for this to come up, so much other stuff, because she is acting up out loud where people, it's pitiful.
It is. Well, what are your takeaways from this? I think my takeaways would certainly be leave if you think someone's trying to kill you, because we also saw it with the pharmacist who was poisoned mm-hmm. by her husband.
Right.
You know, the same sort of thing that she, I think she felt like perhaps there were some strange things going on with him. And at any rate, mm-hmm. I don't think, I still can't help but think that people just deep down, when they're not that way themselves, they don't really believe someone will do that to them.
Right. I believe that. You have no basis for thinking like that. You're like, you know, some people say, well, I would never do that to people. And my mother taught me when I was young, I'd say that. She said, well, they would. You know,
no, it's
and
sad.
So, and she wasn't a negative person, but it sobers me up real quick to go, yeah, they would.
Yeah, it's just, you know, factual.
Right, they would. So, I don't know. I'm just real funny. I don't even want to be around friends that lie or friends that use people or people that, and those aren't your friends anyway, or people that do that. I just think the best thing to do is to be around people that are good and people that are like the sunshine. And if you accidentally or however end up with someone like that, I say this every time, divorce already. Quit killing people.
Right.
I don't understand why people have to kill each other. Just divorce or get the money in the divorce or whatever, if that was what's important to her. Because look at her life now. She's never going to have money again. She's never going to have status. She was a cashier at Home Depot when she met him. He made her life so much considerably better. He adored her. He loved her. And I think
and she loved herself.
Yeah, and she loved herself too. They had that in common. So, you know, I just think that you just have to get to know people. And he couldn't have gotten to know this in any way, because sometimes money is what changes people mm-hmm. or something is wrong. Sometimes people have a mental illness. It's quite obvious she has a mental illness, and it's quite obvious she believes what she wants to believe. And like I said, it's pitiful that we're sitting here watching it, knowing that everything she says is a lie that's fried, dyed, and laid to the side.
Excellent. Well, Pam, thank you so much for joining us on this episode.
You're welcome.
We thank you for joining us as well. That is it for Accused of Fentanyl Poisoning Her Husband and Authoring Children's Grief Book. I'll take Who is Corey Richens for 100, Alex. And we appreciate you joining us for all the episodes of Gulf Coast Confidential. I'm your host, writer, and producer, Molly Barrows, with co-host and researcher, Pam Hill. And a big thanks to director, editor, and production engineer, James Roy, as well. Don't forget, you can listen to more Gulf Coast Confidential episodes wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Just remember, you can also watch on the Gulf Coast Confidential YouTube channel as well. Don't forget to like and subscribe.